The point of rocks in Sauk County and the meteorite fragments from Iowa County have garnered a lot of interest lately. Bob Dott Jr. is a UW-Madison Emeritus Professor of Geology, and Bob, it's a pleasure to see you again. Thank you very much. And Jamie Robertson is a professor with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey and is also the state geologist. Pleasure to see you today, Jamie.
I'm pleased to be here.
And earlier this year, the Wisconsin State Historical Society's Board for Historic Sites approved the nomination of the Point of Rock outcrop on Highway 12 near Baraboo for addition to the state's list of historic sites. Bob, is this something you've wanted to have done for a long time?
Yes, for more than 10 years, 15 probably, because the site was threatened back about 1980, and they wanted the Department of Transportation wanted to improve that curve. It is a nasty curve.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we reached some kind of a compromise. The previous state geologist was most important in that. I had a little bit to do with it. But anyway, they took off. We let them take off 10 feet. It didn't hurt the most important features that we like to show to students and visiting colleagues. But then in 2007, we learned that the Department of Transportation was again planning changes on the highway, mainly to convert it to four lanes, which is a good idea there. And they wanted to take the whole thing. Well, we got pretty alarmed, and I enlisted Jamie and several of my colleagues from the department and contacted the department and told them, hey, we don't like this idea. This is a very important locality for teaching purposes, also for research, and for historic reasons. And they said, oh, we didn't know that. And so they accepted an invitation to go up to the outcrop one morning in the spring of 2007, and the six or seven of us told them the different aspects of the geology of the rock and why it was so important to us. There must have been 25 people, I believe. Is that about right, Jamie?
I think so, yes.
Engineers from the department and from a contractor that was designing the new alignment and from the federal highway people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very cordial, and they sort of said, oh, well, maybe we'd better modify the alignment. It was that easy, to our great surprise. We thought we were really going to have a fight. But they were very cooperative and sympathetic, and right on the spot they said, yes, well, we'll have to realign and save this. And indeed, they've done that. And I think in about two more years, they're going to actually start the new construction. And we think we're going to also benefit from it by getting a little turnout and cul-de-sac.
Hmm.
So parking will be much safer.
Now,
now it's not very safe. It's such a
You have to park right on the lane itself.
A few years ago, they widened the shoulder on the northbound side, and so we can park there, but it's still dangerous, and it's terribly noisy. It's awfully hard to talk to a large group about the geology there.
Tell me, Jamie, if I'm a motorist and I'm coming along, let's say I'm going out of Baraboo and I'm approaching this, what am I seeing? What am I looking for?
Well, actually, if you're going in that direction, you're probably not going to see very much because the best exposure of that particular outcrop is facing the other way.
So you're coming into Baraboo 4 or 5 miles away.
That's right. If you're coming from the Badger Army Ammunition Plant up the hill and through the Baraboo Range, then on the right-hand side, you get the best view. But typically, if you're driving, you're probably going too fast, and you don't get a very quick look at what is simply a rock outcropping along the side of the road sticking out of the undergrowth.
Bob, what makes this so special? What makes it so important?
Well, there are several features that are particularly well exposed there. It's probably the single best exposure in the whole Baraboo Hills for these particular features, some of which tell us the story of the deposition of the sand that was then later converted to sandstone and finally to metamorphosed sandstone, which is called quartzite. And the formation is called the Baraboo quartzite. It's a red, reddish to pink rock that forms all the higher parts of the Baraboo Hills and is so prominently exposed at Devil's Lake. And so there are features, particularly in the wall facing the highway, closest to the highway, that are especially well exposed. They apparently were sandblasted during the glacial time, and put a bit of a polish on them, in fact, so that the features formed by currents and waves in, during the deposition of this in shallow ocean water are so obvious there, so conspicuous. Then up on top, not so visible from the highway, there are deformational structures associated with the formation of the structure that underlies the Baraboo area. And these are classic features that our structural geologists get very excited about. And so there are many things to see there, both of its original deposition and then of its later metamorphism and deformation.
We're talking with Bob Dott Jr., who's a UW-Madison Emeritus Professor of Geology. Jamie Robertson is a professor with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey and is the state geologist. I'm Jim Packard. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you with us today as we talk about geology, points of rock in Sauk County and meteorite fragments from Iowa County. If the site in Sauk County near Baraboo were to receive a national listing, what would that do in terms of future highway alterations?
Well, it would offer considerable protection from further ideas to take it away. I think that's pretty unlikely once they've produced this new four-lane alignment. But but one never knows what in the future might be a conceived for some sort of modification of topography. But we have been successful in getting it listed on the state on the state historical sites register. We obtained that rating in February.
And what does it take to get that done?
A great deal of paperwork on some what I found to be unfriendly software. But luckily I had the wonderful help of a nice lady at the Historical Society who works in their preservation office, Mrs. Dana Pinkiunis, and she rescued me with producing this rather about 20-page document, which tells why it's important in the scientific sense, as we talked already, but also and especially why it's important historically. And I should say a little about that, I think.
Sure.
It was a locality, along with other parts of the Baraboo Hills, where early geologists, and especially a well-known name, is Charles R. Van Hise. But he had a small army of younger geologists working under him for a study for the U.S. Geological Survey to study the iron ranges of the Great Lakes region, of which Baraboo is actually a part. Most of their work was farther north in northern Michigan, northern Wisconsin, and Minnesota. But in the process of their work, they were confronted, and this would be in the late 19th century, 1880s to 90s, and into the early 20th century, they encountered problems. First of all, most of the rock exposures, especially in the farther north, are very isolated and surrounded by swamps and marshes and vegetation generally. And yet they knew the geology must be quite complex. So they developed important principles for extrapolating from local outcrops like this one, Point of Rocks, and others at Baraboo, north of Baraboo, west of Baraboo, at Rock Springs and Devil's Lake and other places too. They figured out how to extrapolate from careful observation of the features they could see in the rocks at that locality. They could extrapolate amongst localities to work out the larger structure that they really couldn't see because of these scattered exposures. And in the case of the Baraboo Hills, this locality and others were instrumental in deciphering that the Baraboo Hills are underlain by a large downfold, which we geologists call a syncline, a large downfold of the rocks formed per a million, billion, 0.6 or so million years ago, on the north side of the, in the northern range of the hills, just north of Rock Springs, for example, these rocks come up out of the ground and are vertical. And there are similar structures there which can be contrasted with those on the south limb where Point of Rocks is located. And it so happens that quite a number of years ago, actually in the late 90s, a particularly good instructive exposure north of Rock Springs, which has been named for many years Van Hise Rock, has been given a national landmark, historic landmark status. And so we took that as partly a precedent for arguing for some kind of historic status for the Point of Rocks. But it's early work, and much of the establishment of these very important principles, which today are taught to all structural geology students, mm-hmm. were developed by our early pioneering geologists in Wisconsin. So there's another reason for preservation.
For preservation. We're talking with Bob Dott Jr. and Jamie Robertson. Jamie, let me ask you this. We've talked about the state list of historic sites. How many of those might be geology-based rather than some other building or something like that?
Well, that's a excuse me. That's a good question, Jim. From what I've been able to learn, none of the other state historic sites are geology-based. However, in Wisconsin, there are currently 40 national register or historic landmarks, and of those in Wisconsin, three are geology-based, the Van Hise Rock that Bob just mentioned, mm-hmm. and two fossil coral reefs over in the Milwaukee area, Schoonmaker Reef and Soldier's Home Reef. So there is some modest, small precedent for recognizing, celebrating, and hopefully saving these geological places. Jim, I'd also like to say, as kind of an interruption to Bob's wonderful geology lecture, that one of the things that pleased me the most about this process was how open various state agencies were to having a conversation, a negotiation, and ultimately coming up with a compromise solution that served us all well. The Department of Transportation, our DNR, among others, and their consultants were, as Bob said earlier, very open when a bunch of geologists who obviously are passionate about this issue appeared. We didn't have our rock hammers. We weren't threatening physically, but these folks were very open. The process worked well, and I remain very impressed by how all of these things were resolved in an acceptable way.
Yeah, because if you accept the popular press, why people would be digging in, resisting any efforts like this.
So the
lesson is, don't believe the popular press, and yeah.
Well,
go ahead and do it.
You need to have an issue, you need to have passion, and you need to get the right people on the right day.
We're talking with Bob Dott Jr. and Jamie Robertson. If you'd like to join the conversation about geology, rocks, and meteorite fragments, why, give us a call. In Madison, or in Wisconsin, the number is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. There was a program earlier this week for the 40th anniversary of Earth Day, and we got done talking about it in the earlier program. I know, Bob Dott, you were there at the Nelson Institute's conference, and give us a few thumbnail thoughts about what you saw and heard.
Well, it was quite exciting. There were almost 1,400 people registered, I understand, and it was Tuesday and Wednesday. I went on Tuesday. I couldn't go yesterday. But it was quite exciting to see all these people, many of whom were old friends from way back when they first started. I remember E-Day quite well here in Madison. They had a panel. One part of the program was a panel of people who had been organizers of the local program, and they reminisced a bit and had perspectives on where we are now. And everybody agreed that Gaylord Nelson would doubtless hardly approve of all of this, but also, as people there emphasized, see the need for further work on environmental protection and improvement. The first morning was very interesting. It was some past perspectives and foresights as well. William Cronin gave an enthralling talk, as he usually does.
Yes, he's very good.
About the history of why the roots, the Wisconsin roots of Earth Day, why here, in a sense. Of course, Gaylord Nelson's the main reason, but why was he so...
Let me interrupt that thought, and we'll keep it. We'll come back after the news, and we'll pick up on that thought. And I'll just remind you that you're listening to Bob Dodd, Jr., a UW-Madison Emeritus Professor of Geology. Jamie Robertson is a professor with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey and is the state geologist. I'm Jim Packard. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today as we talk about geology. Bob Dodd, Jr. is a UW-Madison Emeritus Professor of Geology. Jamie Robertson is a professor with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey and is also the state geologist. And gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in to share some time with us today.
Glad to do it.
Bob, I know that you were on a thought as we broke for the news dealing with Senator Nelson and what he would be looking forward to.
Yes, we're talking about the 40th anniversary of Earth Day, founded by Nelson, of course. And I was mentioning that Professor Cronin here at the university gave an interesting introductory talk at the conference on Tuesday, talking about the roots of Earth Day in Wisconsin, really answering the question of why here rather than somewhere else. And one of the interesting things about his talk, I thought, was that he really came to the point that it was kind of an outgrowth, or at least strongly consistent with the notion of the Wisconsin idea, which, of course, comes from about roughly 1900. And I kept waiting to hear about Charles R. Van Hise, a geologist whom we mentioned a little earlier. I was afraid he wasn't going to mention him, but he finally did. And Van Hise is relevant because he, when he became president of the university in 1905, he soon ran a seminar about conservation. During his earlier purely geologic career, working in northern Wisconsin a great deal, mapping the various iron ranges, they were working during the time when the great lumbering was going on. And he became very alarmed at the devastation of the landscape by the lumbering. He saw the terrific amount of soil erosion that was prompted by the denudation of the land and the damage to rivers and streams produced by all the runoff of the soil that was eroded. And he started a seminar, which he taught while he was president of the university, about conservation. And out of that seminar, his lecture notes, he converted into what has become the first textbook of conservation published ever. And Bill talked about that, of course. So that was a very interesting morning, and other folks spoke also about some of the history of the movement. And then in the afternoon they broke down to breakout sessions on such topics as sustainable landscapes, food security, energy problems, climate change, biodiversity, and water.
Yeah.
Covering everything in the environment. And also there was a great emphasis on people, more so than back in the original Earth Day, more about people and societies and cultures and communities and how we're all part of this ecologic environment we live in. And this was, I thought that was an interesting aspect to bring more of that, more people things into it.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org as we talk with Bob Dodd and Jamie Robertson. And let's take a caller from Appleton. That's Roy. Hi, Roy. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you? Well, I've been listening to your fellows with a great deal of interest. I've left the Niagara Escarpment area of Appleton. I've just driven through the bottom of old historic Lake Wisconsin, and I'm heading over to the western part of the state into the great Wisconsin River area. But I asked them to talk about the complexity of Wisconsin geology. Our son is a geologist from UW Green Bay, and I had the privilege of on field trips with Doc Rock, Len Weiss out of Lawrence University in UW Fox Valley. But just talk about how interesting the geology of this state is and what has meant to the beauty of this state.
Jamie?
I guess I'll take a crack at it. One of the things that's impressed me most about the Wisconsin landscapes is how young they are, geologically speaking. From a geologic perspective, the glaciers were here yesterday. And many of the features, the hills, the valleys, the distribution of different kinds of materials are the same that you would see if you went to a place like Alaska today and looked at what was happening in front of or underneath the glacier. It's not a fluke that the last great ice movement into the upper Midwest is called the Wisconsin, simply because we have such great landscape features. Some of us who worked on older rocks in our former lives unfortunately regard some of the materials that the glaciers left as what we would call overburden. Meaning they're covering up the good stuff that's down there a ways. Underneath the glacial material, the northern part of the state is incredibly complicated because typically at or near the surface are very old rocks, Precambrian in age, and they represent about 2 billion years of Earth history that is left the record in Wisconsin. It's a complicated record full of mountain building, erosion, volcanic eruptions, and the like. As you go south, those complicated rocks are covered by a progressively thicker veneer of fairly flat-lying, younger Paleozoic rocks, mostly sandstones and carbonates. Those are a little better behaved structurally, but they too are a very interesting record of, in this case, about 150 million years of Earth history. And then everything pretty much, except in the southwestern part of the state where the ice never reached, is covered in turn by a blanket of glacial materials. So Wisconsin geologically is both complicated and tremendously interesting.
And Roy, you may be interested to know that this is the year of the Niagara Escarpment. I don't know if you know that, Bob.
Yes. Right.
And so on the 6th of May, that would be next Thursday, or a week from Thursday, Joanne Klusendorf is going to be with us. We're going to be talking about the Niagara Escarpment at 11 o'clock that day. So you may want to join us for that. We're talking with Bob Dodd Jr. and Jamie Robertson. Last week, there was just great excitement about the meteor that flashed through the skies here. I saw a picture that was taken from a nearby building, the Space Science Building. It really was an awesome display in the sky. And let's talk about the fragments that are now being sought for. What are people finding in Iowa County, Bob?
They're finding more and more of these, even almost as we talk, I suspect. And several of them have been brought to our department here on the campus and are on display in the Geology Museum in Weeks Hall, which is at the corner of Dayton and Charter Streets. And they are, you can visit the museum anytime the rest of today and tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday. It just happens to be the museum's open house day, and they're going to be open for a good part of the day. There are small pieces of meteoritic material on display in the museum. The largest of those was about 2 inches in diameter, I suppose, so they're not huge. Lots of people probably think they've got a big, great big item, but they're not huge. There was one written up in this morning's paper here in Madison that a man, I think he was from, where was he from? I've forgotten already. Do you remember?
Illinois or somewhere?
But it looked to be even a little bit larger. And they're measuring them mostly in grams. That one, I think, is 125 or 130 grams. Most of what we have over at the museum are much smaller. But one of my colleagues, Professor Valley, John Valley, and his scientific associate, Dr. Kita, have been very anxious to get a hold of as many as possible to study, not necessarily to keep, but at least to do some laboratory measurements. And they have been successful in doing that, getting the compositions and so on.
Yes.
In this regard, Jim, I'd like to put in a pitch for a couple of websites. The Geology Museum that Bob is referring to at www.geologywisc.edu/museum or about a museum. has got a really nice section on is it a meteorite? Yeah. And it's a place where you can work your way through if you found something you think might be a meteorite and take a first crack at deciding whether you want to bring it in or whether you want to set it aside as a not meteorite or as what the people call meteor wrong. The other site is our own Wisconsin Geological Survey site, and the best way to find that is to go to wisconsingeologicalsurvey.org. O-R-G. We have a nice history of meteorites in Wisconsin and document the last about 150 years worth of information we have about 12 meteorite falls that have happened and that have produced samples. And also some information about a couple of slightly more spectacular meteorite impact events. One at Glover Bluff in Marquette County and the other at Rock Elm in Pierce County, where the meteorite kept itself together, hit the landscape, and produced a rather large hole.
I would think so, yeah.
In Rock Elm, the hole is about 4 miles across, although it happened hundreds of millions of years ago and has subsequently been filled in so that it takes a geologist kind of with his eyes tuned up to appreciate that particular place. It's not like Meteor Crater in Arizona. Mm-hmm. It doesn't jump out at you. But there's evidence that there was an impact there, even though no meteorite fragments have ever been found. And at Glover Bluff, it's about a mile across. And again, no meteorite fragments ever found, but the rocks have been disrupted and textures in the rocks, to the best of our geologic knowledge, could only form by an impact. So if you're interested in kind of the Wisconsin perspective, I do encourage you to go to the Wisconsin Surveys website.
Okay. Let's take some more calls. And we'll go to Cliff next in Dubuque. Go ahead, Cliff.
Yes, good show today.
Thanks.
I'm a rock driller in that, and I guess they got some good websites they were saying there, I guess. What I'm looking for is to find more information for the rock that I drill in different, you know, what strata and that. And I think, that's my question. So,
I think you should consult the Iowa Geological Survey in Iowa City, located on the university campus there.
Okay.
They can tell you a lot more than we can about your rocks. They possibly have some actual well records from very near you.
Okay. Well, and too, is I also get into the Wisconsin and Minnesota and stuff, mm-hmm. and that, so I do, get to different states and that also.
Well, we'll put in a pitch for your favorite local state geological survey as likely to have records that would give you a context and a sense of what you're likely to encounter in a particular neighborhood. So by all means, take advantage of that resource.
Cliff, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate hearing from you. Let's go to Bessemer, Michigan, and to Nick. Hi, Nick.
Good afternoon. I was recently in the Hartford area in Wisconsin, near Holy Hill, and I was impressed by the steep glacial ridges. They were actually scary. There were narrow roads at the top of these ridges, and I understand it's called Kettle Moraine Country. And it seemed to me that these particular deposits in that area were distinctly different from the other I've seen further north of there. I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
All right, Nick. Thank you very much for the call.
Yes, the Kettle Moraine region is quite famous in Wisconsin and is a very prominent feature. It is actually a mixture of glacial hills and different kinds of glacial landforms that follow run quite a distance from almost Green Bay, a little bit south of Green Bay, south to not quite to the state line, not quite to Illinois. And in the simplest way to think about it is there were two main lobes of the last ice sheet that came from the north, covered most of eastern Wisconsin. One lobe followed the lowland that already existed, which would become Lake Michigan, and the other followed the other lowland to the west, namely the Fox River Valley and the Horicon Marsh area and so on. And as you know, there's a ridge between, a fairly high area. It's called the Niagara Escarpment because it is underlain by rocks that are roughly 400 million years old that belong to an interval of geologic time we call Niagaran, which was named, as you might have guessed, for Niagara Falls. And those rocks can be, and an escarpment, a ridge, can be traced all the way from Niagara Falls, where we're named, across Ontario, and they curve up north of through northern Michigan and turn south then and come down into the Door Peninsula. They form that peninsula and then extend on to the south and underlie the Kettle Moraine. The Kettle Moraine itself, its surface materials, are all glacial and were produced by the impact of those two ice lobes. They were trying to push each other around a little. And so a lot of drip material got deposited more or less between them. And that's what formed the Kettle Moraine.
Our number is 800-642-1234 if you have a question that you'd like to get answered. I know that Bob is the co-author of a book on Wisconsin geology that we should mention as well, because lots of people have been asking for information. What's the name of the book again, Bob?
Roadside Geology of Wisconsin. Co-authored with one of the associates of Jamie at his survey, John Attig.
John Attig.
He works at the Geological Survey with Jamie. Yeah.
It's a tremendous book, and we've used it many times since it came out, and appreciate the efforts that you made.
Thank you.
Let's take some more calls. Joanne in Calumet County is next. Hello, Joanne.
Hi. Hi, Bob. Hi, Jamie. This is Joanne Klusendorf.
Hello,
I just wanted to help instill some more pride in Wisconsinites about the geology here in our state.
Good.
You mentioned the different national historic landmarks that are actually related to Wisconsin geology. We in Wisconsin actually have more in our state than any other state. And these national historic landmarks are actually at the same level of historic landmarks like Independence Hall in Philadelphia and Gettysburg Battlefield in Pennsylvania. These are historic landmarks in the history of science. The National Park Service actually understands how the history of science is also as important as the history of our American government and things like that. So it is really something to be very proud of. I also want to commend the Department of Transportation for their understanding of the importance of geological sites with the point of rocks. And I understand from Dan Reed, who is the geologist at the DOT who brought point of rocks to our attention, that they are now going to be taking this taking geology into account in future road projects. And I can't tell you how important this is, because we have lost some very important geologic sites over the years because the DOT just didn't know, and working scientists, working geologists, didn't know what was happening with the roads. So if we learn to cooperate a little bit more and both be on the same wavelength, I think we're going to actually be able to protect and preserve things more readily. And these are not just minor things, as you were saying about point of rocks. You know, this has importance in the history of our science and in the history of the state, and how important some of the scientists in Wisconsin were to actually conceptualizing geological concepts and that sort of thing. And I think that maybe one of the things we should be doing, just like the archaeologists do, if there is construction, it stops if there are remains found or artifacts found. I think that when it comes to geological exposures, there may need to be something similar in affected, and that's something I hope that as the state we can work towards. And finally, I have to put in
we're running out of time, Joanne.
For the Weiser Science Museum, okay? You want to learn about Wisconsin geology? Come on in down into Menasha. You can check us out at wisemuseum.org and learn all about Wisconsin geology.
Joanne, we'll look forward to a conversation with you on the 6th of May.
I look forward to it, too. It's the year of the escarpment, and I am excited. Love the ledge. That's our goal.
Thanks very much. And Jamie, you had some comments you were going to add.
Well, I want to thank Joanne for her comments. If there were ever what we'd call a type specimen of a passionate geologist, I think Joanne fits the bill. And I need to give her major credit for helping bring to the attention of the state and ultimately the Park Service the three geological examples of National Historic Landmarks. Joanne really led the charge on all three of those, and so she's not only got the energy but the experience, and we may need to recruit her to help push Point of Rocks to its ultimate.
I'm sure she would join in. Greg's in Waukesha. He's next. Hi, Greg.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a very fast question.
Okay.
One of my favorite things to collect are Louisiana banded agates, and I've done it for just about my whole life. But I have a question about their classification geologically. Are they considered rocks, or are agates considered minerals? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'll go out on a limb and say that I've always regarded agates as minerals. They're certainly made up primarily of the mineral quartz, fine grain, albeit, and with stripes and other peculiarities. But Bob may be shaking his head. Can you hear that?
Oh. I agree.
Oh, he's agreeing. All right.
So you've got a unanimous opinion on this one.
On agates, yeah.
We talk a little bit about the meteorite fragments found in Iowa County. You said they're at the Geology Museum. These fragments are on display through Sunday?
Well, no, they'll be on display longer, I believe.
Oh, longer
I don't
than
know
that.
Exactly, but Sunday is an
Dayton
open
and
house.
Charter, the intersection of Dayton and Charter
Dayton
in Madison.
Dayton and Charter, yes.
And they'll be open through the weekend?
Yes.
Which is a little unusual, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is a little unusual. On Sunday, it'll be open 12 to 4.
Okay.
Tomorrow, 9 to 4.
And as far as the Wisconsin Geological Natural History Survey, do you have a museum or an area there that you put things on display, Jamie?
We don't at the moment, although we do have a facility out in Mount Horeb that we're in the process of developing. Right now, it's a set of research collections, samples from the state. I'm, in fact, fond of telling people that we have the state of Wisconsin in a warehouse in Mount Horeb. Obviously, it's not quite all there. We have representative samples. But at the moment, you need to have some research credentials and work with one of our staff members visit.
Jamie, thank you so much for being with us today. Jamie Robertson is the state geologist. He's a professor with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey. Bob Dott Jr. is a UW-Madison Emeritus Professor of Geology. Thanks to both of you for coming in and spending some time with us today. It's been a pleasure. And coming up tomorrow at 11, Larry's back for Garden Talk with Melinda Myers. That'll be coming up on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Skip the waiting room and join us for another edition of Zorba Pastor on Your Health. You'll get all the great advice without those lousy magazines, plus a heart-healthy recipe for
eggplant fresh.
We always have a great time, so will you, Saturday morning at 8 and Saturday afternoon at 1, here on the Ideas Net.